Hello and welcome to part 11 of my podcast, All About Antarctica. I'm Dr. Steve Emsley, and I'm a professor in the Department of Biology and Marine Biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, where I've been teaching an undergraduate class titled Antarctic Ecology, Geology, History, and Policy. In this podcast, I've distilled this class down into numerous parts that cover all these topics about Antarctica. Part 11 presented here begins a new section of this podcast on Antarctic history, beginning with the discovery of Antarctica. As mentioned in previous podcasts, Antarctica is a huge continent, over 5 million square miles in size. Yet, it was not until the 1800s that humans first set foot upon it, and not until the first half of the 20th century before it was confirmed that it really was one large continent under the ice. Why did it take so long to learn this about Antarctica? Let's start with some of the first explorations to the south, beginning with the Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan, who completed the first circumnavigation of the world in 1519 to 1521. Actually, Magellan himself did not complete this circumnavigation. Only his ships and crew did, as he died in a skirmish on the beach with natives in the Philippines in 1521. Magellan, though, did discover the Straits of Magellan, or the waterways leading from the Atlantic to the Pacific Ocean, across the tip of South America between Patagonia and a large island, Tierra del Fuego. At that time, it was thought that the tip of South America connected to a southern continent that the Greek mathematician Ptolemy had first proposed existed there in 150 AD, which he called Terra Australis Incognita. But the Straits now indicated this was not true. Still, Magellan believed that Terra del Fuego connected to a great southern continent and did not venture farther south. His discovery of the Straits did lead to additional expeditions into these waters. In 1577, the English captain Sir Francis Drake was sent south to these straits and to claim any new lands he discovered for England. He made it through the straits, but then was hit by a huge storm in the Pacific, and his ships were blown to the south of Cape Horn. Cape Horn is actually a small island on the most southern tip of South America. Drake, then, was the first to see that there was more ocean to the south, not a continent, and that this is where the Atlantic and Pacific oceans merged. He also provided perhaps the earliest known written description of a penguin, probably the Magellanic penguin, that is common in that area today, as he mentions the burrows they make for breeding. His details on these birds are unusual for a captain to write about, so I suspect he really liked penguins. After Drake reported that no continent was connected to Tierra del Fuego, interest waned in exploring farther south after this, though some ships were blown that direction in the late 1500s and early 1600s and reported seeing ice and snow-covered islands with high mountains. These could have been South Georgia Island or the South Shetlands. It was a French explorer, Jean-Baptiste Charles Bouvet, who was next to venture south, specifically to search for a southern continent, with two ships in 1738. He was also obsessed in finding a lost tropical paradise described by another French navigator, whose records were lost. But it probably referred to the Amazon in Brazil. Bouvet made it to Brazil, then traveled south from there, eventually sighting ice floes, penguins, and then an ice-covered island hidden in fog that he thought was a cape of a continent. However, because they began their voyage to seek out a tropical paradise, he and his men were not prepared to deal with the cold, wet conditions of the Southern Ocean. Some of the men were also getting scurvy, a common disease for sailors on long voyages caused by going several months without vitamin C from fresh meat, fruit, and vegetables. If left untreated, it can be fatal. So Bouvet turned back north, and we now know the island he discovered was actually an island, rediscovered much later by Norway and named Bouvet Island in his honor. Next, another French explorer, the naval captain Yves-Joseph de Kerguelen, left in 1771, again to search for the missing tropical paradise. He went to Amsterdam Island in the Indian Ocean first, then voyaged farther south, eventually discovering the Kerguelen Islands, a group of subantarctic islands, but not the tropical paradise he hoped for. He returned to Madagascar and claimed to have found the lost continent, though. Later, when that claim was proven to be false, he was dismissed from the Navy and imprisoned. That brings us back to the English, this time with the famous Captain James Cook, considered the greatest British navigator of the time. He was self-taught in math and astronomy, and joined the British Navy in 1755 at the age of 27, where he quickly rose in rank. By 1768, he commanded his first expedition to the South Pacific, and was the first to map the coasts of New Zealand and more coastline of Australia. After these successes, he was given a new command to find Bouvet's lost continent, as it was still not known at that time that Bouvet had only found an island. Cook did not relocate this island, but he did go farther south and encountered lots of sea ice, so turned back to New Zealand. He spent the winter there, then traversed south again, sailing to Tierra del Fuego, then relocated South George Island and discovered the South Shetland Islands, before returning to England in 1775. Cook was famous by this time and given command of yet another expedition in 1776 to find the Northwest Passage in the North Pacific. So, to get from England to the Pacific, his plan was to sail to Tahiti first, and then went south to round the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa to reach the Indian Ocean, then the Pacific. Here, bad weather forced him south again, and he relocated the Kerguelen Islands, went back to New Zealand, then voyaged to the north in the Pacific and discovered the Hawaiian Islands in 1778. Unfortunately, after a few months there, he died in a skirmish with natives on the beach of the Big Island on February 14, 1778, at a spot still marked today with a monument in his honor. As for Antarctica, Cook was the first to cross the Antarctic Circle at 66 degrees south and first to circumnavigate the entire Antarctic continent, but he never saw it. His reports seem to prove that there was no southern continent. One unfortunate result of his voyages, though, was that his reports of large numbers of seals on sub-Antarctic islands immediately led sealing ships to head south to start killing these animals for skins of fur seals and blubber from elephant seals. Whalers followed as well, as whale stocks in the north were starting to run low, with all the exploitation occurring there. By the 1820s, numerous whaling and sealing ships could be seen in the South Shetland Islands, but they kept many of their logbooks secret so as not to give away the best hunting grounds to other ships. A British captain, William Smith, was first to land on the South Shetland Islands, followed soon after by an American, Nathaniel Palmer. While these and other captains continued to exploit whales and seals, and the evidence they left behind for this can be found on almost any ice-free beach among these islands, scientific expeditions were to come next. The first scientific expedition to Antarctica was when Russia sent Captain Fabian Thaddeus Bellinghausen in two ships, the Vostok and Mirny, now the name of two Russian stations in Antarctica, to the South Shetland Islands in 1820. He continued south from there, becoming the second person to cross the Antarctic Circle at about 69 degrees 21 minutes. And there he saw continuous hillocks of ice, which could have been icebergs or perhaps even the continent, but it can't be verified. He ended his voyage in Australia, but left there later that year and went even farther south and found islands along the base of the Antarctic Peninsula, including Alexander Island that he named for the Tsar at that time, then discovered and named Peter One Island that is so remote that it was 100 years before the first landing took place there in 1929. Continuing up the peninsula, Bellinghausen came across 8 English and American sealing ships and met Captain Palmer, then returned home. It's likely that he or the sealers saw the Antarctic continent first, but again, it can't be verified. After this expedition, Russia lost interest in exploring the south. The next scientific expedition was by the French, who sent Dumont d'Urville on a voyage of discovery in 1837. He first tried to go farther south than the Weddell Sea, then the 74 degrees latitude reached by the Scottish sealer James Weddell, the first person to sail that far south in 1823. However, this sea is often clogged with pack ice, and d'Urville was unable to do it. He went back to the South Shetlands to explore there. In 1840, he sailed south again and came along the coast of East Antarctica at Point Geology and landed on a rocky islet just offshore from the continent. He claimed the land for France, and now the French research station Dumont d'Urville is located there. The Americans were next in scientific exploration with Captain Charles Wilkes of the U.S. Exploring Expedition in 1838 to 1842. He took 4 ships commissioned by the U.S. Navy to explore the Antarctic, map coastline, and collect natural history specimens. So the expedition included 82 officers and 9 naturalists, scientists, and artists. The ships split up to explore different areas, but one was lost in a storm off the coast of Chile. One ship made it as far south as Cook had at 70 degrees, and another ship had a chance encounter with Dumont d'Urville, but didn't make contact. When Wilkes finally returned home, there were lots of errors in his sightings, and he was subjected to a Navy court of inquiry. He was the first, though, to refer to an Antarctic continent, though many still believe that there was only ice and rocky islands there. He also returned with over 60,000 plant and bird specimens, many of which were deposited in the newly founded Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. The next expedition was by the English captain Sir James Clark Ross in 1839 to 1843. His mission was to search for the magnetic South Pole to help understand navigation at sea. Ross was perfect for this mission, as he had considerable experience in the Arctic and was an expert on terrestrial magnetism. As part of this mission, he established magnetic observatories at the Cape of Good Hope, the Kerguelen Islands, and Tasmania. Important to note here is that the two ships Ross had were the Erebus and Terror, built for war with iron sheath bows. These ships would later be used by the Franklin expedition to locate the Northwest Passage in 1845, when both vanished with all men, and their fate was not discovered until many years later. It's a fascinating story, and if you want to read more about Ross and Franklin, I highly recommend the book Erebus by Michael Palin, published in 2018. Back to Ross's voyage, though. He was able to navigate through ice and reach the Ross Sea, the first expedition to do so, and landed on Possession Island, just inside the Ross Sea, where they planted a flag. He also sailed all the way to the front of the Ross Ice Shelf, which he called the Great Ice Barrier, as they could go no further south from there. He saw the Transantarctic Mountains for the first time, and named two volcanoes, Mount Erebus and Terror, after his ships. Ross tried to return to the Ross Sea two more times after this, but ran into more storms and nearly collided with icebergs, so never got back. It was still unknown, though, if Antarctica was a continent despite seeing the mountains, as they could have been just a series of islands covered with ice. After Ross's voyages, Antarctica was largely ignored for over 40 years until the 1890s. Now we enter a period of time known as the Heroic Age in Antarctic exploration, which I will cover in the next podcast. Thank you for listening to my podcast, All About Antarctica. I'm Dr. Steve Emsley of the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and I hope you tune in to Part 12, The Heroic Age.